What are some of the breakthroughs in recovery? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
What's up, bro?
What is going on, Brandon?
Not much. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was a nice weekend. It finally got some springtime weather. The sunflowers are starting to come up in the mountain just above our house. Like probably next 3 days, it'll just be pure yellow. It's awesome, man. It's a good time of year.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I hope it's looking nice up there. I put in for the hunt up there above your house. So keep an eye out for some bucks up there.
We'll do some scouting for you. We got a few months before that happens.
You're my guide. Just like life, just like in life. I mean, you're hunting guide, but you're my guide in life. So
that's dangerous. I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah. Well, we have one of our favorite people here with us today. So we have Bob with us. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, guys.
Just so
everybody knows who Bob is. Like, Bob ended up attending our Rising Sun retreat, and he's the most tenured participant we've ever had. And it's a physical thing, and Bob somehow figured out how to like do just about everything we could possibly put him through. And then he's been on the show before with the past episode, and now he's back here to talk a little bit about his progress over the last couple of years and continue to talk about rebuilding trust. So, Bob, we're really happy to have you, and it's good to see you.
Thanks, guys.
Bob is a man full of wisdom, so it'll be good to hear the things that you've learned just in the last couple of years, breakthroughs with recovery. So, Bob, if you could just start back and just tell us what's been going on with you and fill us in since the last time we saw you.
Good. Well, hey, the last time was just about a year ago, and that was about a year after the Rising Sun retreat, sort of. Well, not quite a year, but almost. Anyway, the issue that I was raising last time was how, you know, given my age, and I'm now 83, I was 82 last year, given my age, how long is it going to take to rebuild trust? And I'd heard this is a long process. Some people talk about 10 years, you know, and so that was kind of the thing that was really pushing me. Briefly, you know, the situation was such that for well over 40 years in our marriage, I'd had an affair. We were married about 10 years, and I had an affair, and that, you know, we quotes got over, as it were. But then I fell back into no more. I never had an affair again, but I got into porn, got back into porn. The affair kind of actually relieved me from porn. But anyway, I got back into porn, and that went on for 40 years, and it was an absolute total secret to my wife for 40 years. And, I would maybe be at the computer, and she'd say, well, what are you doing? I said, oh, I got a lot of work to do, and I'm at the computer, and she's, you know, down there waiting for me. Finally, after all those years, about 3 years ago, I decided, hey, I got to get to the bottom of this thing. What's going on? Because even though Mary Lou didn't know what was going on in terms of her about pornography, she did feel this distance. She did feel, you know, that I'm not present to her. And so then when we went through the BAI process 2 years ago, and all of that broke for her, she just really became in touch with betrayal trauma. And that's what was going on, and she didn't know it. And so it just hit her like a ton of bricks. And she just was really suffering from that. So I was like, over a year into recovery the last time we talked, and I said, how long is this going to take? I'm doing all the right stuff. I'm clean as a whistle in terms of pornography. I'm working really hard. We even had some couple therapy. I'm doing my therapy. She's doing her therapy. You know, and all of that's going on. And so the big question for me last time was, you know, well, you know, how long is this trust gonna take? And what I realized, and this is kind of where we're now moving into to what the recovery has been this past time, is that what I realized was, for me, recovery is, when am I going to get back in bed with her? And it wasn't just sexual, you know. It was, hey, you know, when can I have a hug? When can we kiss? You know, and all of that was pretty much off bond. Out of bounds, you know, and not allowed. And it was just driving me crazy, you know. And I thought, how long is this going to, what's going to go on here? You know, how long is this going to be? And, you know, my actuarial tables were such that, hey, I don't think this is ever going to clear up, you know? And yet I really did get to appreciate what trauma, is about, betrayal trauma. And you know, and I heard stories from her as we talked and all about how her whole life was kind of shaken by this. And here, one of her big claims was, hey, you know, she and I are the same age. She says, hey, I'm in my 80s, and I had no idea that at this point in my life, I would be dealing with this tremendous uncertainty. And it's not fair. It's just not fair, you know. Mm-hmm. And she would say that, and I'd say, yeah. Anyway, so what I was doing, you know, was doing my work, and I felt like it, you know, I was coming, but it's like, how long is it going to be? And that was the big question I had for y'all last time. And that was such a powerful session. And I probably listened to it almost a dozen times, just because every time it's just richer for me, you know, to be able to catch it. But the final part of it, and I think you were voicing it, Tyler, at the end, was like, hey, you know, Bob, we've gone through a lot of issues, and you're, you know, you're in touch with what's going on, and you're into what's kind of the big trauma for you and all of that. But you said, and I thought, oh, okay, we got it. And you said, but you didn't use the word but, but anyway, it was like, what's really important, and you threw it out to me like a challenge. What's really important is for you to discover yourself. And I thought, oh wow, I didn't know it was going to end this way, you know, like yeah, I hear you, you know, but I thought, you know, I just thought we were handling everything. And then a couple weeks ago, y'all had this podcast where just the two of you were talking, and it was about this business of the difference between sobriety and recovery. And at one point, Brandon, in there, you just said, recovery is recovery of self. And I went, mm-hmm. Why did I have a V8? You know, why haven't I heard that before?
Mm-hmm.
And it all of a sudden it went, oh, I did hear it before. That's really what Tyler said at the end of our last session, the session I had with you. So anyway, but it's been, let me talk then. You know, that was really helpful, and that's kind of really where I want to go. But I want to talk about what the year has been like, because for the first 2 years, again, the measurement for me was, when am I going to get back in bed? When is that intimacy going to be rekindled? When is she going to, you know, feel more at peace? When, you know, and what's happened? And this, you know, has to me been a real shift. I have, for the last year, I haven't felt that way. I haven't felt like getting back in bed is going to be the measure of my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait a minute. There's a whole another level of relationship that we need to have. And it's not about if I'm in bed with her. It's not about if she's hugging me or kissing me. you know, if she's accepting me, it's not about that. What it's about is, what kind of intimacy are we developing now? What kind of intimacy have we had, let's say, in the past 2.5 years since the discovery? Because it dawns on me, wow, there has been an intimacy. And my measure of what intimacy is was wrong. And that's really hard to say, man. The last thing I want to give up is sex. The last thing I want to give up is, you know, this real tight, euphoric feeling with her, you know, and how good that feels. And yet, it's scary to say, but there's been a movement for me in terms of saying that that's not the measure. The measure is, are you looking her in the eye? Are you kind of touching her gently and lightly? Are you really listening to what she has to say? And that's been the real struggle, I think, this past year, has been being able to, and I said it on the podcast last time, but it's just making more sense to me now. And somehow I think I'm living into it. And the phrase was, you know, Mary Lou will hear you when you hear her. And I just this past year has been such a struggle to hear her, to say, hey, you know, what is she feeling? And all of a sudden to realize that that's where the intimacy is. That's where the intimacy is. The intimacy is in healing and hearing. It's 40 years of ghosting her, you know, and 40 years of, like, you know, just, you know, in one day, all of that 40 year thing was just broken open and she went, oh my God, you know. So the healing of that, I think it's healing, but I don't know for sure, you know. But in any case, the healing of it is that I'm not anxious with her. Now, another thing that you guys really make a lot out of, and it was real clear on the retreat, the Rising Sun, you know, was this whole, and I think Tyler, it's back to your question, you know, who are you? What's the real you? And that's the masculinity issue, you know. And I had to tackle that. You out there, what's his name? The book that you were recommending on masculinity.
Was it Wild at Heart? Or
yeah, yeah, Wild at Heart. Sorry. So I remember, you know, getting it right away and kind of like, you know, it's, this isn't working for me. It's, you know, and then finally, again, one of your podcasts in the middle of the year brought that back up again. I said, Bob, damn it, take that thing up. And it was helpful. It has been helpful. I'm almost finished with it, but it has been helpful. And for me, you know, masculinity is, as I said, you know, a year ago, is the penis. That's what masculinity is. And all, you know, whatever, whatever that happened, whatever. But it's like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, kind of really saying no. Because, see, Matt, if I'm masculine, I'm going to have a good relationship with my wife. That's a penis relationship, and that's what's changed this year. It's like, wait a minute, and that's slowly changing. But I'm getting back to the big question: who I am, you know, and being able to embrace a sense of masculinity. That's been the progress for me. So, you know, the whole, like, you know, we went through the holidays this year and the holidays would kill me. You know, why am I not in bed with her on Christmas night? You know, come on, you know. And it's like, no, this year that's okay. And what was the okay about it? The okay about it for me was, boy, talking to myself, you got to learn more about what intimacy is, and you are learning it. And letting that go is helping you learn more about intimacy. And during the whole period, we've remained good friends. I mean, there have been times when I said, I think this is over, we got to go. And there were times when I got her really upset, you know, and that kind of stuff. But that's pretty far behind us. And there's just this kind of, now let me just say one other thing for what it's worth. And this is really crazy. Okay. But for the last, I'd say now 8 weeks, Mary Lou came down with shingles. And the first 2 weeks she got the vaccine the antibiotics, and she was handling it. But the last 5 weeks every day has been worse. This morning was worse, you know, than it was. And it's just kind of amazed me how all of a sudden, at her expense, I have felt closer to her in this period than ever. And it's not my concerns and my narcissism and, you know, my king baby kind of reactions. Those are just kind of out of the picture right now. And it's, again, it's been this deeper experience of intimacy that has been there. That's kind of it, guys. There's another issue maybe we can raise as we go along. It's about attachment stuff. But anyway, let me stop there. That's probably gone on too long.
Do you want to start, Tyler?
Well, there's a lot there. Yeah. Yeah, actually, Bob, I appreciate you checking in with this. It's interesting, and I think we're going to maybe draw some connections here between the two things you said about recovery of self and then figuring out how to build intimacy with your wife. And I think that the more you work to recover yourself, the more you come to understand a different idea of what you thought masculinity was. And the more you step into knowing yourself, you're now bringing back a different version of masculinity than you thought before. The first version was, you said the penis energy, but it was like, I was hearing consumption. I was hearing me. Like as soon as she has sex with me, that means we're okay again. As soon as I'm in the bedroom again, that means we're okay again. As soon as, this is your attachment question, but as soon as, then I'm okay. And then all of a sudden you said something started to click where you said, I've started to see her. I've started to know her. I've started to attune to her. I've started to show up for her. And that, which one sounds more masculine?
Definitely.
The second one is actually more masculine. Right. It's an offering of self and strength. That's why you need to know self, because you don't know what you can offer until you know yourself. So you're offering self and strength rather than, oh, I hope she can, oh man, if she just gives me a hug, then I can get through another day. Like, ooh, that's a lot of pressure on her. That's gonna be hard for her to even have room to try to like figure out herself and trust if she's always having to manage your feelings for that, right? So,
yeah. Just going along with what you're saying, Tyler, this is a great example of what we see all the time is, like my addiction or my behaviors have gotten me in trouble with my main relationship in my life. Now, in order to get recovery, I need to fix things in that relationship so I can get attachment again. And if addiction is an attachment disorder, which it is, it's interesting because we actually double down on our efforts to get our worth and our value through other people, right? Which we think is recovery. Like, oh, if she has sex with me again or she loves me again, then I've done the right things and I've proven myself. And we're just like consuming someone else for our self-worth. When in reality, recovery is recovery of self. And there's three recoveries. And the first recovery is yours. And what that means, it has nothing to do with them. It has nothing to do with her. It reminds me, I looked up Apple. So Apple's phones, Tyler refuses to get one. but Apple's changed the world. And their mission statement is to bring the best user experience to its customers through its innovative hardware, software, and services. What you don't hear in there, I'm going somewhere with this, hang in here with me. What you don't hear in there is our mission statement is to make a lot of money. Now does Apple make a lot of money?
Yeah, that's just how they treat everyone who has an Apple phone that has to buy all sorts of extra things to plug
in. Okay, let's not go on your soapbox. Do they make a lot of money? Yes, they make a ton. They're one of the biggest companies in the entire world, right? But they know their mission. They know who they are. So they yield results of money. Sure, a man who knows who he is will probably yield results of connection to a woman. That happens. But first and foremost, they're focused on knowing who they really are and being who they are. So if you're focused on the outcome and you take that outcome and you say, that's evidence that I'm now in recovery, then you're missing the boat. Mm. If you're focused on the input and understanding who you actually are first and foremost, then you'll know what recovery is. Then you can surrender over and you don't need to consume anybody for your self-worth because your attachment is with God. You know who you are and you're okay. Right? Did I get there with the whole Apple thing?
Nailed it, Brandon. So a different way of saying that is that, and I sometimes see this as being like the thing that we get in the way of ourselves with is we think we look out to the future and say, as soon as I have a good marriage, then I'll be a good man. And really what we have to do is we have to pivot and say, God, who am I? And when we say not just build into a better person, in a lot of ways, we're surrendering to the truth of what's always been there, of accepting the truth of everything we are from God. And that's a further shot than my marriage.
Yeah.
And my marriage gets addressed by looking into the future with God, because God's going to turn around and say, you are, and I give you all these names, you're patient, you're humble, you're a warrior, you're a teacher, you're a guide, and you're a husband, you're a provider, you're a lover. And when you get those marching orders from the bigger source, it also envelops being a good husband. It's like what Brandon's saying. Apple stays focused on their mission and the money takes care of itself. And for recovery, if I stay focused on my mission, which is the uncovering and acceptance of the truth of who I am, my marriage will take care of itself.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what you're saying, right, Brandon?
Yep, exactly. It's interesting. I'll give you an example of this. I saw a man last week whose wife was really, really triggered and angry at him. And he came. So he was going to go have a conversation with her and try to figure this out. And I got to talk to him right before she went into that conversation. And there was fear in his eyes. There was like tons of fear. Like, first off, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. Is one of the things he's thinking. So how do I go in there? I want to stay honest. Secondly, like, I don't want her to be mad at me. I want her to like me and think that I'm okay. So what do I do? And the reality is he needs to separate himself from her. I'm okay. I know who I am. Her feelings and her pain can be totally valid and heard. When I'm strong enough within myself to know who I am, this is the kind of conundrum to all of this. If I know who I am and I don't care about what she thinks about me for my self-worth, then I can go listen to her. I can care about her because I've understood my mission and my recovery first and foremost. And that's how it works. And Bob, it sounds like you're starting to understand that. You're starting to see what that actually means, right?
Yeah, I just want to underline something. You started this piece at the spiritual level, the spiritual connection. And again, I'm pretty sure it was you, Brandon, during that previous broadcast of a couple of weeks ago, you did two or three times, you said, when you're talking about self-identification, you kept using the phrase "I am," I am. Now that's a, as you know, that's a very biblical phrase. Moses is at the burning bush, and he's being told, he says, well, who should I say sent me? Again, mission, you know, I think that's an, and the answer is, I am sent. And that identification of my self as this image of God, you know, the I am, that's just.
Bob, give me some of your I ams. What are some of your I ams?
I am generous. I am concerned. I am loving. I'm really interested in people. I am a guy that can, you know, do a decent job teaching and now for my wife gardening. We won't go there, but no, seriously, that yeah. So, and I am in our parish. I'm a good participant in a lot of our different communities and that kind of thing.
Okay,
those are what are hitting me.
What about these ones? Tell me how you feel. I am loved. I am seen. I'm important. I'm uniquely important to God's plan.
Those are all very challenging. All three of them.
Those are challenging. Why?
Well, I think I get so nervous about the I am loved one because, you know, I think what you said before was really helpful about being consuming, you know, and somehow if for I get scared. For me, wanting to be loved, I feel like I'm consuming.
I didn't say I am wanting to be loved. I said I am loved.
Yeah, I know.
Did you see where you went with that, Bob?
Yeah.
See where you went there? To just accept that, to just bask in it, to just look at your face.
I wish people were watching right now, because as soon as Brandon even started, Bob, did you feel your body? Like,
yeah, right away.
Hunch your shoulders and brace like you're bracing for impact, like someone's going to hit you.
Yeah.
but Brandon's bringing something up here, Bob, that I think is actually a very misunderstood part of what humility is. And from a Christian perspective, Christ is the ultimate in terms of humility, right?
Right.
But if you look at the things that Christ accepted and said about himself, our world wouldn't call it humble. I am that I am. I am the bread of life. I'm the true vine.
I am the light.
I'm the light, the life of the world. I, you know.
Sounds pretty pompous to me.
Is that humble? Or the humility, and this is what Brandon's getting at, Bob, the humility is the acceptance of the truth.
Yeah.
And that means all of the truth. That means, yes, I have my weaknesses, and yes, I sometimes consume, and yes, I do this, and I am still loved. I'm a living, breathing miracle. I'm a force for good in this world. I'm all of those things that you can uncover for yourself that make you unique to God's plan. And you have to accept all of that if you want actual humility. And what was that deep breath, Bob?
Well, it goes back to a lot of what I had in the last year ago time together, and that's this sense of inadequacy, and I mean it really is a learning disability that's a big block for me, you know, and it keeps showing up in different ways, and I real quickly. Before I went to grade school, I was the happiest kid in the world. I was a skinny little kid, you know, and I was doing everything, and the world was my oyster, and I was just a really happy kid. And then all of a sudden, I got into school, and school was such an awful challenge to me. And the challenge was they didn't move slow enough for me. I could do it if you just give me a little more time. And it was nope, move on, you know. I remember in third grade, we do penmanship stuff, you know, where you do the little circles, you know, and in third grade, we had this lined paper that had a in the middle of the line, there was another line, and you were supposed to keep your little O's below that. And I was working on it real hard. And then they took the lined paper away. And I said, don't do that. Don't, you know, give me time. Anyway, that's too much on it. But the point I'm trying to make is that was the reaction. It was like, no, I do have a disability, and I and that disability just, I don't remember a lot of stuff. I could never spell, and I don't remember. And one of the things that Mary Lou just has a fit in is, you know, we'll say, all right, here's what we got to do today. And then, you know, 2 hours later, I said, what's on for 2 o'clock? She says, I told you. Oh, I know. And anyway, that's where that was coming from. It's like, it's just hard to feel that, because there is a disability.
It's hard to accept what?
It's hard to accept the truth because you have a disability?
No, it's hard to accept that, you know, the phrase, you are good, you are, you know, that the one I winced about.
Bob, what'd you do for your career?
I
I know the answer to this,
but all right,
I want you to say it.
Look at the books behind me. I mean, I did a PhD in religious education at Notre Dame, of all places. So there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a discrepancy between what you're saying and what you did in your life and who you really are. But what I'm noticing is a little bit of I want to hang on to some control about about what I am and who I am. Like when I say to you, I am loved, and you say, well, you responded with, well, I shouldn't need love. And then Tyler saying, no, humility is just accepting the truth of who you are. You are loved, Bob. Whether you like it or not, whether you need it or not, whether you whatever, you are loved. Okay. You are brilliant.
So let me right? If you don't mind. Let me
go ahead. Yes, please.
Because this is where the thing I said I wanted to insert. What I have been always very much aware of, but particularly, I don't know, in the last couple of months. I've been aware of what is extremely hard for me, okay? And I experienced it at Rising Sun. I experienced it when I went to a 2 week BAI program. And I experience it every time I walk into an SA meeting, okay? And that is, I am terribly uncomfortable in a group. It's like because what happens is, and I'll just take the SA as a good example. So they're sitting around, you know, 20 guys in a room, and guys start to talk. And I really feel attracted to what a guy is saying, you know, and it's like, oh, wow, you know, and I want like, God, afterwards, I want to have a deeper conversation with him, you know, and that never works. It's like, you know, I'll have it. And I want to go back to your word consumption, because that's what it feels like for me. It and that bothers me. You know, it's like, wait a minute, I want to talk to him because I think I got some stuff to offer. He's got a lot to offer me. You know, that would be great for us to have a conversation. And yet it's my fear is my sense is, no, I'm wanting to consume him. And time after time, you know, when I will get a guy's number from SA, you know, and I'll send him some. Hey, I heard this. I'll send him your podcast, but I'll say, hey, this is really what I heard you guys, you know, you talking about, this, and this is how it affects me. And I get no response. And I go, Bob, what is going on? And why does that bother you so much? Why does that bother you that guy didn't respond to you? You know, and it's and for me it is. You know, that whole business of psychological term we used before, attachment. There's something. Now, one on one, I'm terrific. So let's go back to the thing at the Rising Sun. You know, I walk in there and I'm kind of overwhelmed. You know, but I meet. Well, no, actually, I came out with a guy. We rented a car together. And so, you know, and so I really, that was really good. I got to know him and talk to him. And in a one-on-one thing, you know, it's really great. But in the group, there's this, and the feeling is, they know I'm a fraud. They're not interested in me. You know, that's kind of what's going on. And so once I get, you know, like out there, you know, I didn't have a lot of them. I expected more, but I thought we'd have, you know, a couple more one-on-ones, but group thing was just very difficult. I'm probably not explaining this real well, but anyway, that's the experience. So where that ties in, it seemed to me, to what you're saying is that it's you know, this idea of that I am loved, that's my experience, and that counters, you know, I am loved, because I am loved means I want to be the center of attention. I want, and that's consuming, and that scares me.
What does it actually mean?
Yeah, what does I am loved actually mean?
What does it actually mean? Because what I'm hearing, Bob, is all your story. This is all your story of, well, I try to connect, I overconnect with people, and then I send them stuff and I don't get responses, and I don't, yeah, you know, but wanting to connect, that's just consuming. That's all the story. What does I am loved actually mean?
For some reason, I don't know.
Are we stumping you? Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah. Let's just maybe start here with what you said about your wife and what you're learning in the last year, because she hasn't come back to loving you the way that you expected her to. You've actually learned something new about love. What have you learned? What have you learned about love in your relationship with your wife?
It's learning.
Yeah, well, but you're in the process of learning, and you said some things in this episode today, Bob, that you've learned something new about love that you hadn't thought about before. You've gone to a new depth of intimacy and love with your wife, not because you've consumed her, not because you hug her and go to bed with her and sleep with her.
Yeah, it's that I don't get anything out of it, and I mean that in the right sense of that term. I mean, it's like I'm loving her. I'm seeing her, and it's like, wow, she doesn't have to do something to make me feel more intimate with her.
You're learning in the offering of it that love has a different set of conditions than maybe you thought it did.
And I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I cut you off, Brannon.
No, I just I think that there's something else going on here, which is, and we could dig all the way back, and it comes back to what we initially were talking about, Bob, which is love is there. Like I believe God is love. Love is everywhere, and you know, when we talk about God winks and God being there for us and all of our, what's God doing through us? God is always just loving us. And what I'm hearing from you is, you know, we have our agency, and I'm hearing a little bit of, yeah, but I'm going to control this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to decide what that actually means, so right, that I don't fully just drink that in. I don't fully just enjoy being loved by God. I'm going to put some contingencies upon it. I'm going to put some story to it. So, because I got to be careful to fully accept. And Bob, you could be completely annoying to everybody. And everybody could reject you. Ugh, Bob, yuck, ugh, get away.
Brannon, think about this, what Bob just said. We just got done establishing earlier in our episode that addiction is an attachment disorder, and now Bob's wondering if he's loved because the guys at group who have addictions don't return his texts.
And that's where he defines his love.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty good. Yeah. If they text you back or not, you're loved. You're seen, you're known, you're important. all those things are true without your story, regardless. And when we talk about recovery being recovery of self, there's a couple things like that. That seems pretty out there. Like, what does that actually mean? Here's my experience. One, you know, no matter what sins, no matter the things I do, that I am loved beyond comprehension by God. That's one thing. So then I can separate my need for worth from other people, and I can have a crazy mullet and not care what people think because I like a mullet. Like, that's great. My wife can give me a bad look, and I can go dig into her feelings and listen to her because I'm boundaried there. I know who I am. That all happens. So there's a second piece to knowing who I am. It's not just God loves me unconditionally, and I know that. The next piece is why am I the way that I am? What did God make me for? I am important. I have a purpose. And so if I have a purpose, the fear and the shame has come to me and tried to shut that down and tell me you're not good enough, you're not this, you're not that, so you can't step into that purpose. But when you do know that God loves you, you know that you're important, you start to see your talents and abilities and important little things that God put inside of you that you can then give back to the world and spread things, create, spread love. So that's a person in recovery. A person in recovery can be boundaried and empathize and also step into their purpose. So that's a person who knows who they are.
Yeah, I that's fantastic, and it is insightful. But I get the scary feeling still, you know, that when I do talk about mission, you know, when I do enter into something, I just get so scared because I find my idle thoughts going, oh my God, you're gonna write this. I always have this, you know, you talk about mission. So if you were to say, well, what's your mission? So my mission is to save the Catholic Church.
Okay.
There are different things I kind of want to do and poke at and all of that, but the point of it is that it scares me in the sense that like if I go to give a talk, which I often have a chance to do, if I go to give a talk, it's like I get scared about is this being meaningful to them, or am I just wanting, you know, to be praised? It scares me to death that that's what I'm thinking about, and it bothers.
Bob, like Apple doesn't worry about the money, right? So if you were to give that talk, if you were to step into that, and you know your purpose, whether they like you or not. If your purpose is speaking truth, helping the church, you're going to have people that love you and you're going to have people that hate you, but you're speaking the truth. And if that's your purpose and that's your mission, that's what you do. And yeah. So again, focused on the wrong thing for your worth, right?
Yeah. 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 That is challenging. I like that. I mean, that the focus is truth, you know?
Yeah, and you're actually in the right vein. You just need to keep bringing your focus back to the truth, because you're already on the right path in terms of, I've been called to become an educator and a speaker, and I think those are some names that you could wrestle with between you and God, because you're already all of those things. And bringing the focus back, and that's the courageous step. That's the faithful step, right? You said, I'm scared. Well, good. That means you're right on the edge of a threshold. That means that you need to be stepping off the edge of that and recalibrating it time and time and again, like, oh, nobody liked my talk. Well, why did I give the talk? I just gave a talk to save the Catholic Church to a bunch of Catholic people that like the way the church is.
That's like, my mission.
Okay. That's like sending out a text to a bunch of 12-step guys who don't respond to me. Like same thing. Like I didn't do it for that reason. I did it because God called me to do it.
Yeah. Right? And I feel that. Right.
Yeah. So I'm going to reground myself to that over and over again. And what's interesting is that the more authentic you become, it becomes its own filter, and it actually puts the people who you need to interact with in your way more often. And you will connect with the people that you're meant to connect with, not only for your own support, but for your own influence. And that will be the byproduct. It's just like making money for Apple. It's going to be the same thing with your marriage. It's like, when I step into my purpose more fully, more holy, more accepting of the truth of who I am.
Yeah.
Over and over again. And I get to do repetitions of this over and over again. It'll actually draw the right people to me.
You know, it's amazing when you did the marriage thing. I went, oh yeah, that, because that has shifted for me. You know what what I'm expecting from Mary Lou, how I want to be with her. That's more a model, I think, of what you're saying about the bigger, you know, mission picture. But so I have experienced that.
But Bob, you have a lot to accomplish still. But also you have accomplished a lot in your life. You have a lot of years behind you, and it's fascinating to me as I talk to you, in spite of your shame, and in spite of this need for others' validation, you have lived a purposeful, mission-filled life where you've created amazing things and done amazing things. And for you to stop for a moment and say, and instead of say, yeah, but to bask in that and to be grateful that God has called you into these places and you've stepped up, to just do that a little bit of like, yeah, it's been amazing, right? Can you do that?
Yeah. And let me just say what that pushes me for. There's a way in which all of a sudden, now I've got a 56-year-old son, a 55-year-old son, and a 45-year-old son, and I'm noticing, particularly with the oldest one, there's been an interesting shift in terms of connection, and that's actually, to me, that's following up on what you're saying. It's like, you know, wait a minute, you know, whatever a jerky father had been, you know, for his growing up, he and I are able to talk about that.
Yeah.
And wow, that really feels good.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So, but that's the connection for me of what you're saying. It's like, yeah, you know, this, and I guess the point is the fact that we can have that connection. I had that with my dad. I mean, Dad and I were great buddies, but not like that. And that's a new kind of connection to me. That is a result of just being able to say, hey, you know, I want to be of service. And
yeah. I love it, Bob. I know, Bob, we're just about out of time here today. Did we even touch on what we need to touch on today?
Oh, sorry. For me? Answer me? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. My God, no, several things. I mean, first of all, just opening up all kinds of different dimensions of the recovery that you know, I can latch on to that, and you know, anyway, it was perfect. I really appreciate it. And then obviously the attachment thing, you know, is we got to that, but I think most important of all, you know, this notion of truth, you know, what is your sense of truth?
And the truth is, Bob, you are loved, and we love you. We love having you on here. You are a great example to so many people to just keep working on yourself and keep refining and being humble and being open. And so we're really grateful for you. And I just want to thank you for coming back on.
Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
I look at every person that I come in contact with, and I try to see them for the ways that they exemplify Christ to me. Bob, and I don't know if this is a new name or not for you, but never finished. I mean, you're a perfect example. You're in your 80s, and here you are still diving into being the very best man you can be with every breath you have left inside of you. And anybody who hears your story and understands that can at least see the never finished part. And that's a beautiful thing. So, Bob, thank you for coming on today. To our listeners, thank you for being here with us. And until next time, you guys keep on keeping on.
Thanks, guys.